Good morning, everybody. As you know, well, from last week we started our series, which we entitled Heroes of Faith. So last week it was Abraham, and today I'm looking at Sarah, who started her life as Sarai. That any better? Dave mentioned about sort of having half people coughing. Well, I suppose I'm on team cough, but hopefully I won't do too much of that in the next 20 or so minutes while I'm talking to you. The point of this series is kind of emphasising these ordinary people of faith, and that's supposed to be an encouragement to us. So part of what we're doing is we're actually looking at what makes these people ordinary, looking at some of the flaws that they displayed in the Bible. And that's not to put them down, that's not to kind of glorify failure, but what it is to do is to hopefully say encourage us that, you know, we can actually identify with these great people in the Bible, that they're not, you know, overly perfect, that we can actually relate to how they lived their lives, what mistakes they made, but then ultimately how they moved on from there to be great people. So I say I'm going to start off by looking at, say, the character Sarah. I'm going to start off with some boring facts. I've self-titled that. She lived around 2000 BC, so 2000 years before Jesus came along. That's a kind of time period we're talking about with Abram and Sarah. Sarah grew up in the land of Ur, which is around what is now Iraq. She was a descendant of Noah, the daughter of Haran. Although that's a little bit complicated, so I found out that some people say that she's actually a daughter of Terah rather than Haran. It seems a bit complicated to me, but say certainly of that family line anyway. And that family would have been a wealthy family. There would have been a family of significance around at that time. She married Abram. So as we heard from David last time out. Now, Abram was, again, it's a bit complicated because all this whole family thing is a bit complicated. Abram is definitely a relation of Sarah, so Sarai. And it's difficult to know exactly what relation he was to her. May have been her half-brother, her half-sister. Might have been uncle and niece. Now, if you want to talk to me afterwards about, you know, how this works, in the fact that, well, you're not supposed to do that, are you? You know, this kind of incestuous relationship. No, that's not supposed to happen. So you can talk to me afterwards about how that works. But say it was a different time, and there were kind of different rules about that. And I think what I would say is that if God must have approved of this marriage, God must have approved of this relationship because of the blessing that came from it, and the fact that these people were the kind of father and mother of the nation that became God's people. So it seems a bit funny to think that God wouldn't have kind of said anything at the time if that would kind of spoil his big plan. They left for the land of Canaan, as God had instructed Abram. Again, if you remember from Dave's talk last week, they actually set out from the land of Ur with Haran, with Sarah and Lot, to go to Canaan. But they settled in the land of Haran. Again, we've got a lot of Harans here, don't we? So Haran, the person, is spelt with one R, and the land of Haran is spelt with two R's. But again, I'm presuming that's not a coincidence that these names are quite similar. As I say, God changed her name to Sarah later on in the story of her life. So I guess as I kind of go through my sermon this morning, I may be calling her Sarah, I might be calling her Sarai. I'm going to be mixing it up, but so you appreciate, you know, both of those are her names. I think generally speaking we call her Sarah in the Bible, but yeah, she was born with a slightly different name. And she died at the ripe old age of 127. And again, it is a slightly different period of time where people did live longer, but still, so a very, very respectable age there. So let's look a bit more about what we know about Sarah. We know that she was a beautiful woman. It's not mentioned a great deal in the Bible, but it is there. And I've selected some verses here from Genesis chapter 17. There's going to be a lot of text on the screen. I do kind of warn you / apologise for that. That's just seemed a good thing to kind of put the explanation of what I'm saying on the screen. I'm not going to read every single word. So in this instance, I'm just going to pick out these bits here that are in yellow at the time being. So Abram says to Sarah, his wife, "I know that you are a beautiful woman in appearance." Now, I might be a bit naughty here, but I suppose when I read those words, I thought, well, maybe he was just saying that, you know. It's the right thing to say, isn't it, to your wife, you know. It's like, well, you're beautiful to me. But no, it's backed up here later on as well, because when the Egyptians see her, the Egyptians agree that she is a beautiful woman. It says, "The Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And the princes of the Pharaoh, when the princes of the Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh." So, yeah, it's not just Abram being nice. She genuinely is a very beautiful woman. So when Abram and Sarah visit the land of Egypt, she becomes the talk of the town. And let's not forget that she's no spring chicken at this point. We think that, you know, she's in the region of 65 years old at this moment in time. So again, she's aged well. She's weathered well. Now, this kind of little story here, again, what was covered by Dave last week, talking about this idea of kind of fooling the Egyptians. If you just switch to this one, we're kind of highlighting what's going on here. So Abram says to Sarah, you know, because you're so beautiful, I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to tell them that you're my sister rather than my wife. Now, I don't quite understand kind of the politics of this. I don't really fully understand why this was a good idea. I'm assuming that, as it says in the text there, that Abram was afraid that the Egyptians were going to kill him if she was his wife. And I'm presuming that the reason that is because they think, right, well, you're the husband, so if we kill the husband, wife's free, and then she can marry us. So it was a way of kind of getting at Sarah. But I guess if Abram was her brother, then it kind of switches the relationship around a bit, and they would almost be kind of being on their best behaviour in front of Abram in the hopes that he would kind of give her away to one of them to marry. I'm guessing that's the reason why they put this little plan into action. And again, that people are saying, well, this is wrong, isn't it? This is lie, this is a deception. And it is. It's kind of somewhat immoral. It's not a full-on lie, because remember that, you know, they are related. So the fact that they're, you know, he's calling her his sister, say, is not 100% a lie. I think it's good to point out, this is not God's idea. This seems to be something that Abram has dreamed up, and Sarah goes along with it, says, yeah, okay, we'll do that. And it seems to work, initially at least, as we can see in the text there, that for her sake he dealt well with Abram, and he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys and camels. So initially it works quite well, but then later on, God steps in and he causes Pharaoh's household to have some diseases to kind of make his point that he's not very happy about this. Pharaoh lets Abram go, despite his deception, and so they get away without being punished for it. So Sarah's beauty, for me, I suppose is not of fantastic significance, but does help us to better understand who she is. She's a woman that's no doubt admired by others. Probably makes people jealous, I would imagine. Some of the other women that were around were probably going to be jealous of her, not only because of her status, but because she was very beautiful. And I can imagine that this beauty caused some issues over the years, and again, we've got an example here. What else do we know about Sarah? So I'm sort of talking now about her flaws. Now, it might seem a little bit harsh to talk about this as being her flaw. It's obviously not her fault. And it might seem as a bit of a shame, but this is actually the third thing that we know about Sarah from the Bible. So first of all, we find out a little bit about her father and her husband, and then the next thing we find out is that she is barren. She is unable to have children. So the Bible is not written as a diary. The Bible is not written as a definite sort of chain of events. So even though it's written here that she was barren, I'm presuming that at the point of Sarah and Abram being married, that this wasn't known. It is written very early on in the Bible that she's barren, but I'm presuming that this was sort of discovered later on in her life when they've been trying for a long time and they thought, maybe there's a problem here. But obviously it's important for the stories later on. This would have been a big deal for Sarah. This would have been something that really kind of shaped her as a person and as a character. It was something that would have caused her a great deal of pain and anguish and embarrassment. I mean, now this problem, again, can still cause all of those kind of problems. It can be really, really painful to kind of go through that process of realising that things aren't quite right. But actually, nowadays, it's not that unusual to actually decide that, no, I don't want any children. Whereas at these times, children was a big thing, having a big family was what it was all about. And that was down to security, down to kind of finance in terms of labour to help with the family business or working on the farm, looking on after the animals, etc. It was very much, what you did. So for Sarah, this would have been, a real issue for her. Probably faced some ridicule. Again, those people that were jealous of her because of her status and because of her beauty, this would have been an easy target, wouldn't it? To kind of poke fun at her. Can you imagine social media back then? I imagine that people have been rather mean about her on the likes of Twitter, etc. And I think that the fact that she didn't have any children would have been a very easy target for her to be picked on in that way. Another one of her flaws is that Sarah tried to fix this issue herself. And again, we have heard a little bit about this last week. And again, it's good to point out that just like earlier on when Abram and Sarah had this idea of saying, okay, we're not going to say we're man and wife, we're going to say we're brother and sister. Again, this idea of using a servant, Hagar, to kind of bear children on Sarah's behalf, it's not God's idea. In this instance, it seems to me that this is Sarah's idea, and this time Abraham goes along with it. So it says, now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarah said to Abram, behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarah, Adam's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, the servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. A couple of things here. Again, this sounds, again, in our kind of modern understanding of what marriage is all about, this seems totally outrageous that, this kind of would be allowed, that Abram was able to take another, to have more than one wife, to have another wife. Again, it's a different time. This was a lot more acceptable back in those kind of days. And again, God wasn't kind of against this idea in principle, it seems. God was very much into multiplying, so covering the earth as quickly as possible, and obviously having multiple wives was a good way of achieving this. So again, just pointing out, they said this isn't a kind of a crazy idea from Sarah at this point. Also interesting, I think, the language that she uses here. Sarah says, "Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children." Again, that's kind of very much in terms of what your perception is about what's going on. And again, we've spoken about that a little bit this morning already, and the fact that, God did not choose for Sarah to be barren. God did not say, "I've got a great idea, Sarah, you can't have any children." We know that God is good. He didn't do that. But what God did do was he noticed that Sarah couldn't have any children, okay, because of the results of sin, to do with Adam and Eve and the fall, etc. And he said, "Right, I can use that to my glory. I'm going to use that as part of my plan. I'm going to use that to show my power, but later on." So Sarah, at this point, was pretty annoyed and frustrated at the whole situation. So Sarah blames God for the fact that she doesn't have any children at the moment. So there's kind of an element of truth in that. But so he doesn't understand the full picture of what God is trying to achieve. And then another flaw of Sarah is he tries to kind of back out of the deal. He tries to kind of change lanes, if you like. Try to think, maybe this wasn't quite such a good idea in the first place. It says, "And when he went into Hagar and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarah said to Abram, 'May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me.' But Abram said to Sarah, 'Behold, your servant is in your power. Do as you please.' Then Sarah dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her." This is probably a case of being careful what you wish for, if you know that expression. So, this was mission accomplished. We wanted Hagar to become pregnant so that there was a child, so that there was a lineage, an ancestry, that the promise could be fulfilled. It's great, it's happened. But then Sarah thinks, doesn't feel right. It isn't quite what I had in mind. I don't like this now. So she says, she kind of tries to kind of back out of it, really, and I suppose I feel a bit sorry for Hagar at this point, because basically Sarah deals with her harshly, either verbally or physically or both, and sort of is sent away from her. So Hagar hasn't really done anything wrong at this point. Again, she's kind of followed along with the plan. Another one of Sarah's flaws. Again, what she's kind of famous for is for laughing. So this was to do with God's promise to Sarah that she was going to have a child. It says here that the Lord said, "I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Now, when it says the Lord said, it's actually two men that have visited, that have come by the tent. And Abram has gone to these men. He's invited them over for something to eat. So it is kind of the Lord speaking. The Lord is giving a prophecy, but say it is kind of these two men that are actually doing the speaking. And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure?" So when Sarah's saying "my Lord" here, she's referring to Abram. She's referring to her husband, who she calls Lord. And again, we get a good clue of that in the text. We're using a small L for Abram and a capital L for the Lord. I think that's a beautiful way of describing Sarah's situation. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah. I think that's such a lovely way of putting it. That Sarah has now gone through the menopause, so she is no longer sort of biologically capable of conceiving a child. This was no doubt a major blow to her. I would imagine, say, that Sarah was always kind of hopeful, you know, maybe this will happen soon, or maybe next year, and then, say, suddenly gone through the menopause. That had been a big blow to her about her faith. So she laughs. But maybe it wasn't that kind of laugh. There's lots of different ways that we can laugh, isn't there? Lots of different kind of emotions that we can bring. So maybe it wasn't quite like that. But actually, no, that is sort of confronted in the next few verses when actually Sarah lies. The Lord said to Abram, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son.' But Sarah denied it, saying, 'I did not laugh.' For she was afraid." He said, "No, but you did laugh." Again, that's still quite a nice kind of interaction of, you know, really hammering home the point. No, you did laugh. You did doubt me. And Sarah is quite clearly here saying that, you know, she denied it. For she was afraid. Which again, I think kind of points to Sarah's kind of understanding. You know, Sarah was clear that she believed in God, that she believed that God had that power. She believed in the promises. She believed in the journey that they were on. She, you know, she did have that faith. And so she kind of realised that the fact that she laughed and she denied it because she was afraid. She's probably, say, a bit fed up because of the journey that she's been on. I'll come back to a little bit later. On to Sarah's strengths now. So we're going to leave, say, her flaws behind and concentrate on her strengths. So Sarah's mentioned twice in the New Testament, and both of those instances, she's being there as an example, as a good example of what we've been talking about. So here in 1 Peter, she's held up as an example of her faithfulness. So here Peter is giving some teaching, kind of a speech, and this is all to do with husbands and wives. This is all to do with Peter kind of explaining how husbands and wives kind of relate to each other and what they are all about. So again, you can read that text for yourselves. So the ones that I've highlighted here is obviously the bit where it talks about Sarah. "Like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her Lord, as we heard earlier, you are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear." Because Sarah's being held up as a good example of being faithful to her husband. I'm not here to do a whole sermon on marriage or the roles of men and women. But obviously we could easily do that on these passages here. But whilst I was doing some research into my sermon, I did come across a little bit that was just concentrating on these words, because I think that, again, as modern day women, you can read those words and think, it's a bit patronising, it's a bit, not too sure about that. Using the words gentle and quiet, not majorly into that, but there was a little bit of teaching here about those words there. And it says, gentle does not mean passive, weak, or someone that cannot help herself. Rather, it means controlled strength. Picture a mother cradling a newborn. She has the physical strength to harm that child, but doesn't, because her strength is under control. A gentle woman has a humble heart that bows itself before God, recognizes God's dwelling with her as good, and chooses not to be contentious or resistant against him. Quiet does not mean a whisper, silent or bland. Rather, it means tranquility arising from within, and includes the idea of being able to cope with inner peace and calmness in the midst of any circumstances. So, just wanted to kind of bring that out, say, before we might get kind of a little bit distracted by those words there. But Sarah was faithful to her husband. She set off with him on this long journey. Say, at the age of 65, her husband says, right, we're off on a big adventure, and we're going to be basically walking for the next how many ever years as we go on our journey. And she goes along too. And it definitely seems to me that Sarah was loved, respected, and trusted by Abraham. She was not just Abraham's wife. They really do seem to be a team here that are, you know, talking, discussing, that are moving forward together. Another area that Sarah is mentioned in the New Testament is in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is all about faith. And I guess it's kind of based on what we're talking about, these kind of heroes of faith. Because in here, the writer gives a kind of a long list of examples of people that show a great deal of faith. And Abraham's there, of course, is being mentioned as well. Talking about having Isaac and Jacob with him as promise. But again, the bit that I've kind of highlighted there says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since he considered him faithful who had promised. And just reading on a little bit further, therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. Just wanted to read that last little bit, because when I read that, I thought, what does that mean? That it, as him as good as dead, what does that mean? So actually kind of, looked in a few concordances to kind of figure out what that meant. What that means is that, again, about the lineage. This idea of passing down through the generations. Abram's at one point in the Bible, he's complaining to God. He's saying, well, all my inheritance is going to go to this person who's, it's someone's brother's cousin thing. It's some sort of relative of his. And God's saying, no, I don't want that to happen. I want it to go to your son. So that's what it means when it says it's him as good as dead. It means his family line is kind of coming to an end. Both Abraham and Sarah are advanced in years. They're not going to be around massive amounts of years longer. So their kind of heritage is in danger of becoming dead. And because Sarah is no longer able to have children, then it's as good as dead. Their kind of family line. But it's really important here that Sarah has been given a great deal of credit for Isaac being conceived. It says, by faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive. That faith was very important for that to take place. Now, this may seem at odds with the previous text that we look at. Remember when I talked about Sarah laughing and Sarah lying as part of her flaws. And to help with this, I want to have a look at something which I've entitled The Promise Timeline. Now, this is looking at all of the chapters of which Sarah is around in the Bible. So we have Genesis 11 to Genesis 23. In Genesis 11, she's kind of introduced, so she's already an adult by this point. Genesis 12 is the call of Abram. Oh, the numbers in brackets, by the way, is Sarah's age. So say at 65, they set off on their journey. And then we have the bright idea of using Hagar as a kind of subsidiary to have children. And Ishmael is born in Genesis chapter 16, and Sarah is 76 years old at that. In chapter 17, both of them get their name change, so we'll get more on that later. And it's in chapter 21, so again, quite a long way through the story, Sarah is now 90 years old, and that is when Isaac is born. And say Sarah dies 127 years old. So I just wanted to have a quick look at the different promises that were delivered throughout these times. So first of all, starting in Genesis chapter 12. It's now the Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, so that it will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and to him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So we're kind of starting off quite slow, I suppose, in the fact that he's saying he's going to make him a great nation. I suppose he's not. God's not strictly saying that Abraham will have children, although that's kind of implied in the text, but we get that that kind of commission at the start of their journey. Skipping ahead to chapter 15. And Abram said, "Behold, you have given me no offspring, and a member of my household will be my heir." That's what I was talking about earlier, about the fact that Abram is concerned about his lineage. "And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, 'This man shall not be your heir. Your very own son shall be your heir.' And he brought him outside and said, 'Look toward heaven, number the stars, if you are able to number them.' Then he said to him, 'So shall your offspring be.' And he believed the Lord, and he counted it to him as righteousness." Again, that's a pretty clear one, pretty clear prophecy. Skipping ahead again, what's that, chapter 17. "I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her," talking about Sarah, of course. "I will bless her, and she will become nations, kings of people shall come from her." You see the dots, I've just kind of selected a few bits, so there's a few kind of bits missing in the middle. "God said, 'No, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac.'" Actually, yeah, that bit that's missing there is basically Abram saying, "Okay, yeah, well, Ishmael, we can kind of work with Ishmael, can't we? That can kind of be part of the plan." God saying, "No, Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you will call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant of his offspring after him. But I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear you at this time next year." Whew, this is a pretty good prophecy, isn't it? Very specific, time scales, names, you know, this person here, your wife, Sarah, that one, she will bear you a son. And then finally, in chapter 18, they said to him, this is what we've read earlier, we said to him, "Where is your wife?" And he said that she is in the tent. The Lord said, "I will surely return to you at this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." So, I'm assuming that Abram and Sarah talked to each other. I'm assuming that Sarah was informed of these prophecies that had taken place. Sarah, of course, heard at least one through the tent door. Sarah had been through a lot of pain and frustration regarding her lack of offspring. She probably had faith initially, about initial promises were told. She clearly had a bit of an off day when she was laughing and saying, surely it's too late now. But actually, what I hopefully have shown you in those illustration of time, it's she had time to come think this over and come back around to having faith in God that this was still possible to do it. And so she is credited as having great faith in Hebrews 11. So I think that she had faith for 99% of that time. And she basically say had a bit of a wobble in the middle there. Let's talk now a little bit about Sarah's honour. What things does Sarah get honoured for in the Bible? Well, first of all, she gets a name change. Not many people in the Bible get a name change direct from God. So he says, you're not going to be called this anymore, you're going to be called this. And obviously God does that for a specific purpose. I'm not going to go into massive amounts of detail on this, because again, as I've been doing my research, various sources have told me slightly different things about what exactly the name change means. Clearly, because of the different languages involved, it kind of loses a little bit in the translation. The subtlety of the name change seems to be quite similar to Abraham, who changes name from being Abram, which I think means father or high father, to Abraham, which is kind of the father of many. So it's quite a similar, but it is kind of opening up the door to not just being a father, but being sort of the father, a father of great significance, a father of many. Sarai means princess. But when she becomes Sarah, it seems to me more like a queen, more like a mother. Princess, for me, is, I suppose, more of a kind of a daughter thing, isn't it? The princess is the daughter of the royal family. She's kind of a child, if you like, in my head. Whereas her new title of Sarah is more of an adult title. It's more of a queen, more of a ruling title. To kind of, again, indicate that she is going to be the mother of many. There's also a whole chapter devoted to her burial, which is chapter 23 of Genesis. Again, really shows the importance of her as a character, and also the importance that Abraham places upon her. That Abraham really wants to bury her well, and that chapter is all about how he accomplishes that. Sarah is considered a matriarch, which is the mother of an entire nation, the mother to all the Jews. And again, she's in the Bible as a biblical example of faith and faithfulness. Sort of wrapping up now, just wanted to look another part of Sarah's character, which is Sarah's humour. And again, we probably know these verses quite well. We know that the name Isaac actually means he who laughs. So Sarah, I guess, kind of recognises that moment when she laughed at God's promise. And she actually invites everyone to kind of laugh with her about this situation. It says that Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. Who would have thought it, hey? She says, look at me. Look at the age that I am, and here's me with my baby, just as God promised, even though I laughed. So this should be an encouragement to us. I guess we all have personal stories of having faith like Sarah, which means that our faith wasn't perfect, perhaps. We had a few wobbles, and we had some times where we said to God, God, I don't get this. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing it this way? Because surely it would be a lot easier just to do it this way. But ultimately, we can have faith in God, because God is good, God is in control, and God has a plan to turn bad things into good things, into his name. So again, we don't want to glorify shaky faith. We want rock solid faith. But we do recognise that Sarah is held up as a biblical example of having great faith. And even Sarah, say, had a bit of a wobble through those times. So as a way of finishing, we'd like to kind of bless you and encourage you by sort of awarding you a Faith Like Sarah sticker. Everyone likes stickers, don't you? You're never too old for stickers, surely. So I've got some stickers here which just say Faith Like Sarah, Hebrews 11, because that's the book where Sarah is described as having great faith. And there's two little feet there to remind us of what she had great faith about. So yeah, we just want to encourage you to have faith like Sarah, to stand firm, even though, say, you've got lots of reasons why, you know, it can't happen because of this. And if you're going through tough times at the moment, then again, we want to encourage you to hang in there, because, say, Sarah had to wait a long time for God to come through on his promise, but he was ultimately faithful in the end. Okay, so I in my head, I'm imagining maybe a line of gents coming up this side, a line of ladies coming up this side, and I've got some helpers to stick you with a sticker. Say again? Yeah, and say a quick prayer of blessing and encouragement as we do that. And yeah, you might want to kind of peel it off and stick it on your Bible or on your phone or something, somewhere that's going to kind of help you to remember that encouragement of having faith like Sarah. So can I have my female helpers? Sheila, yeah? Oh, there she is. So yeah, so we kind of encourage you to come forward and receive your sticker. So well, me and Dave will do the men, and Wendy and Sheila will do the ladies. And then after we've done that, feel free to stay and be quiet and reflect, or to go next door for your tea and coffee.